The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, Thursday night football was pretty uneventful. I think it went as expected. The New England Patriots smashed the New York Jets 27-14. The Jets had a really solid first drive of the game, and then that was pretty much it for the Jets. Their offense looked horrific last night, but I mean, that's pretty much par for the course for them this season. But the New England Patriots just did what they do. They had a couple rushing touchdowns. Drake May had a solid night, 25 for 34, 281 yards and a touchdown, and just yet another spectacular win from the New England Patriots, their eighth win in a row. So they just keep on winning, man. And they're doing it just by playing good old-fashioned football. So shout out to the New England Patriots for really just turning their season completely around. I mean, they were one of the worst teams last year. I mean, they're 8-2 now that they got the win last night. I think last year at this time, they were 2-8, or maybe even like 1-9. But I know they were one of the worst teams last year, so that kind of turnaround is a big deal. They should make the playoffs whether or not they win their division, but it's just they're playing really, really solid football right now and look really good. All right, moving on to the rest of Week 11 and also my head-to-head matchup with the homie Simon Ruvalcaba. Last week, we both went 8-6, and so we're still tied at 94-54 on the season. And we still remain tied after last night's game because we both picked the New England Patriots. So on Sunday, we have our last international game in Spain. I believe it's Madrid is where it is. I know it's in Spain, but I can't remember which city, but I'm pretty sure it's Madrid. But either way, it's going to be the Washington Commanders versus the Miami Dolphins. Right now, the Dolphins are a 2.5-point favorite. You know, Washington is just reeling from all of the injuries. Jaden Daniels, not going to be playing. I don't think Terry McLaurin's playing. He's pretty much missed the majority of the season. And it's just been a terrible year for Washington. Whereas Miami, it's also been a terrible year for them as well. But they sort of look like they're on the upside of things, but I guess a kind of upside. I don't think they're a really good team, but going up against Washington, they should actually have a pretty solid game. Just because, like I said, Washington is really dealing with the injuries. And even before the injuries, they really didn't have any type of identity. Whereas Miami at least has a little bit of offensive firepower. And they have got a couple of pretty decent wins under their belt recently, especially against Buffalo last week. So I'm leaning towards Miami in this one 20-17. Then we have the Carolina Panthers at the Atlanta Falcons. Right now, the Falcons are a 3.5-point favorite. This is a division battle, so I expect it to be a battle to the bitter end. You know, Carolina, they've had their really bad games this year, but like I said, they've been that team that's staying in it, and I feel like this is going to be one of those games. It's probably going to be a battle till the final drive, but I'm just leaning more towards Atlanta in this one. Not only are they at home, but it just kind of feels like Atlanta's ready to burst, ready to get a win here. I feel like their offense is going to have a couple of big plays, maybe something from Bijan Robinson or Michael Penix. One of them I feel like is going to make a really solid play towards the end of the game and get the win for them. I've got the Falcons winning 27-20. Then we have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Buffalo Bills. Right now, the Bills are a 5.5-point favorite. And I kind of feel like both of these teams are playing the exact same football. You know, they're really good teams. They have two solid quarterbacks with Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield. They've got a lot of offensive firepower, but they've got issues on the offensive side of the ball. I think for both Baker and Josh, sometimes the pressure becomes too much where it's just all on them. They're both very capable quarterbacks who are obviously able to take that pressure on. But if somebody on the offensive side of the ball isn't showing out like they should, the both of them end up throwing interceptions or getting sacked or just costing their team in some way, shape, or form. Both of these defenses are really, really good. But I actually don't think this is going to be a defensive game at all. As a matter of fact, I think it's going to be a battle between Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield. I think it's just going to be back and forth between these two. But I'm giving the edge to Buffalo because they're at home. And if I'm taking, you know, offensive firepower between the two, I think Cook on the Buffalo side of the ball is more reliable with Josh Allen than anybody else on Baker Mayfield's team, because Godwin's not going to play. Evans isn't going to play. The running back situation is kind of questionable right now. They do have solid guys at the running back position. I think Bucky Irving's out, if I seem to recall. So it's just, I feel like Tampa Bay has one too many injuries to really keep up. And I just feel like if I'm going to bet on either team to go back and forth and get the win in the end, I'm going with Buffalo simply because I feel like they have a couple more guys who are more capable of busting out as opposed to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So I've got the Buffalo Bills winning a close one, 31-30. Then we have the Houston Texans at the Tennessee Titans. Right now, the Texans are a 7.5-point favorite. It looks like C.J. Stroud is going to miss another game. But with that being said, Tennessee is just one of the worst teams in the league this year. They haven't found any type of identity in any way, shape, or form. They've looked terrible in just about every game this season. Even the one win they've got, it wasn't a pretty win. And Houston, they got a great defense, if anything. Their offense is exceptionally questionable, but defensively, there are zero questions. And I kind of feel like that's what this game is going to be for them. And I feel like the Texans defense is really just going to take it to the Titans. And I've got the Texans winning this one 20-14. Then we have the Chicago Bears at the Minnesota Vikings. Right now, the Vikings are a 2.5-point favorite. The Vikings are another team that really hasn't found an identity yet. Defensively, really, really good. Offensively, it's just been the year of the rotating quarterback simply because of all the injuries that they've had. And it just has not looked good for them. Whereas Chicago, I think they're starting to find their identity. They've been able to stick in it in a lot of these games. They've had a couple of blowouts. And you could tell offensively they're starting to get connected, if you will. They're really starting to look pretty good. I really like what I'm seeing from Caleb Williams as the season has progressed on. Defensively, I have zero questions about them defensively. It's just offensively, sometimes you're like, what's going on here? But then other times you're like, oh, damn, that's what's going on here. And so in this case, I just kind of look at Minnesota as they don't know what the fuck they're doing, where Chicago kind of, like I said, they're getting better every game. Even if they lose, I feel like I see progress with them. So I've got the Chicago Bears winning a close one, 21-17. Then we have the Green Bay Packers at the New York Giants. Right now, the Packers are an 8.5-point favorite. The Giants, they just fired Brian Daboll. They're losing everybody to injuries. It just kind of feels like the Giants season cannot end soon enough. Whereas Green Bay, they've got their issues as well, but I think this is a good get-right game for them, even though the Packers have not played well against shitty teams this year. I mean, they lost to the Browns, and who else did they lose to? They lost to another shit bag team. God damn, I can't remember who it was that they lost to, but they lost to another team who just wasn't really good. And so don't be shocked if the Giants are able to, you know, show out in this one. But just to me, the Giants have played awful this year. They're one of the worst teams this season. And it just kind of feels like every game somebody gets injured and they have no spark. Jameis Winston is supposed to start at quarterback, but I just feel like Green Bay is the better team. And this is a good get-right game for them. I've got the Packers winning 30-10. Then we have the Cincinnati Bengals at the Pittsburgh Steelers. Right now, the Steelers are a 5.5-point favorite. I'm actually looking at this one being a Pittsburgh Steelers defensive type of game. I just feel like the defense is going to take over in this one. I feel like they're just going to lock it down. I feel like they're going to have Flacco running for his life. I wouldn't be shocked if we have a couple of turnovers here that end up going for a touchdown. And I just think the Pittsburgh Steelers offense is going to do enough to get the job done. I've got the Steelers winning a close one, 17-13. Then we have the Los Angeles Chargers at the Jacksonville Jaguars. Right now, the Chargers are a 2.5-point favorite. I think both of these teams are pretty equal. Defensively, very good. Offensively, neither team has found an identity. The Jaguars, it's like they want to get there, but every time they start getting there, they just fall apart. And it's really the same with the Chargers. It's really Justin Herbert against the world. His offensive line, completely obliterated by injuries. Doesn't really have a number one go-to receiver, doesn't really have a solid tight end, and the running back is just it's just a very questionable ground attack at this point. So it's pretty much just Justin Herbert, and that's all you got going for you. So if Justin Herbert's on his ass the entire game, well, then they can't get much going. But if they do get something going, well, then, hey, they're good to go. But with that being said, I think this is going to be more of a defensive-led game with a couple of really solid offensive plays that get them set up in scoring position. With that being said, though, I think the Chargers are a better team, a more reliable team. And so I'm going with the Chargers in this one, 24-21. Then our afternoon games, we have the Seattle Seahawks at the Los Angeles Rams. Right now, the Rams are a 2.5-point favorite. And this is right here. This is the battle for the division. Both of these teams are tied at 7-2. And whoever wins this one probably wins the division. That's really what this comes down to. I feel like both of these teams are riding high right now. But if I have to pick who I think is the better team, the more reliable team, it's the Rams. Matthew Stafford is playing at an MVP level. I mean, a lot of guys are playing at MVP levels right now, but Stafford is just, not only is he playing at an MVP level, but he's just making really good decisions. He only has a couple of interceptions on the year. He's got some great offensive weapons with Adams and Nacua and Williams, and their defense is just really good. They're getting at the quarterback. They're causing turnovers. And Seattle, their defense is excellent, definitely, but it's their offense, which is very shaky. Really haven't got a good ground attack going, really, in any of the games they've played this year. Sam Darnold, if he gets too loosey-goosey, he tends to throw an interception or just lose some yardage on a bad sack or something of that nature. So in this one, I'm definitely leaning towards the Rams. I kind of feel like they're going to take advantage of the few mistakes that the Seattle Seahawks end up making, and I've got the Rams winning 26-23. Then we have the San Francisco 49ers at the Arizona Cardinals. Right now, the Niners are a 2.5-point favorite. Looks like Brock Purdy's coming back this week for the Niners. With that being said, though, I just kind of feel like this is not a this has just been a crazy year for the Niners. They're playing well, but it just feels like every single game they lose another key player. It's never just like one guy who's a bench rider and they only lose him for a game. It's like a torn ACL for the rest of the season. I mean, this Brock Purdy injury, turf toe, is one of the most unpredictable injuries you can have because, first of all, you're a football player. Every football player is on their feet. So your feet matter in this game. And he's a quarterback, and he's a mobile quarterback. So, and he has to pivot. That's part of the thing. And so if his toe is not doing well, then he can't play. And so we'll see what happens with Purdy now. It looks like he's okay, but it kind of feels like this could be aggravated at any moment as well. Christian McCaffrey, he's had a very solid year, and he's pretty much been their only standout on offense. And then defense, they've had their moments but haven't been that great. But then again, you turn to the Arizona Cardinals side of things here, and they just have been a atrocious team in all ways, shapes, and forms. And so with that being said, I just got the Niners in this one, 21-16, just because I think they're a slightly better team. Just Arizona, they have really no identity, and they really haven't got anything going, and I just think the Niners are a much better team. Then we had the Baltimore Ravens at the Cleveland Browns. Right now, the Ravens are an 8.5-point favorite. I think the Ravens are now going to start get going. They started off the season really, really bad. And now that Lamar Jackson's back, they seem to be getting back in order. They've had a few better moments, but still, I know a lot of people think they're just going to magically turn it on and just automatically win the division. And I'm just like, nah. I feel like they're going to have some... They've got a ways to go. That's just all there is to it. And this is definitely going to be a prove-it game because the Cleveland Browns actually usually play the Ravens very solid. They usually can control Lamar Jackson, and that's because Cleveland has a very good defense, and you also have Myles Garrett back there. So you definitely got to watch out for Myles Garrett. So I don't think this is going to be a high-scoring affair. I think this is actually going to have to be a Derrick Henry game, as a matter of fact. I think they're just going to have to hand the ball off to him. So I think it's going to be, as Derrick Henry goes, that's how this game goes. But with that being said, the Browns on the offensive side of the ball are just straight trash. And the Ravens' defense is slowly getting healthier, slowly getting better as the season wears on. And I just think the Ravens are the better team. So I've got the Ravens winning this one 23-6. Then we have the Kansas City Chiefs at the Denver Broncos. Right now, the Chiefs are a 3.5-point favorite. To me, I like this Denver Broncos defense heading into this one. I mean, they are the top defense in the league, and their forte is taking care of not only your best player, but they know how to make sure your quarterback doesn't take control of this game. And basically, that's all they got to do in this one. Now, I know it's really, really difficult to control Patrick Mahomes, but I think this Denver Broncos defense can do that. And I think that's how this game is going to go. I think the Denver Broncos defense is really going to take care of business. I think this is going to be a slow-moving game, low-scoring game. Don't be shocked if this is one of those games where we head into halftime and it's like 6-6. Because I don't expect the Denver Broncos offense to go off. As a matter of fact, I think the Kansas City Chiefs defense is going to have a solid day as well. I wouldn't be shocked if one or both of these defenses not only make a big turnover, but also score on a turnover. But I'm leaning towards Denver in this one. I think Denver's going to take care of business. I know Denver's going to step it up in this one. They are ready to take on Kansas City. And Kansas City, while they've looked really, they've been playing really solid football lately, I think this one's going to be a difficult one for them. And I've got Denver winning a close one, 20-19. And then our Sunday night football matchup is the Detroit Lions at the Philadelphia Eagles. Right now, the Eagles are 1.5-point favorite. The Eagles, just it feels like every single week, there's somebody talking shit. There's always some type of disarray, but they always keep it moving. But Detroit, I don't think that's a team that you want to be headed into disarray against. They've had their down moments, but overall, this is a really, really solid offense. And I just kind of feel like this is going to be a running back-led type of game. I kind of feel like DeAndre Swift is going to be that dude who breaks off the chunk plays while Montgomery is going to be getting the touchdowns. And I feel like Jared Goff is just going to do enough to keep the Lions in it. I feel like the Lions' defense is going to step it up and control the line as best they can. And I just kind of feel like, you know, the Eagles have not been as buttoned up, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And I just kind of feel like this is going to be a clunky game for the Eagles. And I've got the Lions winning a close one, 24-17. Moving on to the NBA, man. What a week. What a season we've been having in the NBA. There have been so many standouts. And every week it feels like we got four or five guys just outperforming another dude and just all been having great seasons. And it's crazy, too, because, you know, I've always talking about the NBA ratings and how they're like the only sport that really hasn't seen an increase in ratings. Well, this year, the NBA is finally seeing an increase in ratings. And I think part of it is just a lot of the great basketball we're seeing from not only a lot of just star players, but also just teams in general that we want to see win. So let's get started on Monday night. A team that I think a lot of people do want to see win is the Detroit Pistons. They've got a solid fan base, and they just are one of those historic teams that people like to see win. And if they're winning, people are watching. And so they got a really nice win over the Washington Wizards, 137-135. This is their seventh win in a row. So Detroit is really balling hard. Cade Cunningham picking right up where he left off last year. He had 46 points in this one, 12 rebounds, 11 assists, and 5 steals. So he went for a triple-double in that one. And like I said, Detroit playing great on the defensive side of the ball, absolutely dominating the paint. And then you've got your superstar Cunningham showing out each and every game so far this season. And also on Monday night, we had the Miami Heat take down the Cleveland Cavaliers in overtime, 140-138. Wiggins had the game-winning alley-oop, which was just crazy. Norman Powell dropped 33 points, and this Miami Heat team has actually come right out the game and been one of the biggest surprises in the Eastern Conference so far. Then the San Antonio Spurs took down the Chicago Bulls, 121-117. Wemby had another monster game, 38 points, 12 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 blocks. 18 of those 38 points came in the fourth quarter. It was just an absolute domination from Wemby in a big win for the Spurs against the Chicago Bulls. Then another close game on Monday night was the Milwaukee Bucks over the Dallas Mavericks, 116-114. Talking about a monster game, Giannis Antetokounmpo, 30 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists, and 3 blocks. 15 of his points came in the fourth quarter, so just another monster quarter for him, and just an absolutely suffocating game from the Milwaukee Bucks. Then on Tuesday, the defending champs, just keep on rolling. OKC got the win over Golden State, 126-102. Chet Holmgren had a perfect game. He went 9-for-9 with 23 points and 11 rebounds. SGA had another beautiful gem as well, dropping 28 points. Then another surprise team, the Philadelphia 76ers got a win over the Boston Celtics, 102-100. Tyrese Maxey had 21 points. Oubre had the go-ahead basket in this one. Boston, man, they're doing exactly what I thought they were going to do. They were going to be in it in most of these games, but they were going to fall apart just because they don't have Jason Tatum in it, and they just don't look like the same team without Jason Tatum. I felt like this is going to be a struggle bus type of season for the Boston Celtics, and so far it has been. They're not playing terrible basketball, but these close games, especially against a team like the Philadelphia 76ers, they are losing those games. Then on Wednesday, the Detroit Pistons kept on rolling. They beat the Chicago Bulls 124-113 and got their eighth win in a row. Just, they're the best team right now in basketball. They are absolutely playing great, and Cade Cunningham didn't even play in this one. As a matter of fact, the majority of their starters sat in this one, but Paul Reed stepped it up. He had 28 points, 13 rebounds, and 6 assists, and it's just like I said, this Detroit Pistons team, you really have to watch out for them because they are dominating in every way this year. And they just are, they came to play, that's for sure. They just came to play this year, and that's all there is to say about it. Then also on Wednesday night, the Golden State Warriors took down the San Antonio Spurs, 125-120. Steph Curry had a gem, had 46 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. Jimmy Butler dropped 28 points. But on the opposite side of the ball here, on the Spurs side of the ball, Wimby, 31 points, 15 rebounds, and 10 assists. So he had a triple-double in a losing effort. And then speaking of triple-double, let's talk about the triple-double king for the Denver Nuggets, Nikola Jokic. The Denver Nuggets got a huge monster win over the Clippers, 130-116. Jokic did not have a triple-double, though. He only had a double-double. But it was a monster double-double with 55 points, 12 rebounds, and 6 assists. So, you know, we got a lot of dudes starting off this season with monster years, and they are just playing great basketball, but also their teams are getting wins, and it's just been a really solid basketball season so far to start. Moving on to baseball, we actually had the end of the season awards come out this week. So the AL Cy Young, no surprise here, second year in a row went to Tarek Skubal of the Detroit Tigers. He led the league with a 2.21 ERA and 241 strikeouts, had a 13-6 record on the year, and he is actually the 12th pitcher of all time to go back-to-back with the Cy Young Awards. The NL Cy Young Award went to Paul Skenes, the starting pitcher of the Pittsburgh Pirates. He led the league with a 197 ERA in the overall league. Skubal led the American League, but overall, Skenes is the one. He had the lowest ERA, and he is actually the third pitcher ever to not only win a Cy Young Award, but he also won Rookie of the Year. So, I mean, great years from both of them. And then the AL MVP award went to Aaron Judge. No surprise there, because I know a lot of people wanted it to go to Cal Raleigh, but I'm sorry. Aaron Judge, you look at the numbers, he dominated in every single batting category other than home runs. I mean, his on-base percentage was nuts. His batting average, which he led the league in, 331. He had 53 home runs, so he was just barely behind him. It's just, sorry, Judge, and Judge does matter more to the Yankees. As a matter of fact, he missed, 2 weeks in the season, and the Yankees had a terrible 2 weeks while he was out. That just shows you what type of MVP he is. This is Judge's third MVP, his second in a row since he was the MVP last year. And then the National League MVP, no surprise, Shohei Ohtani. He led the league with 55 home runs in the National League. And then he led the overall league in with 146 home runs. He also had a 287 ERA for pitching. This is his fourth MVP, his third in a row. This is a unanimous decision as well for him. And I mean, it's just obvious. I mean, he had a monster regular season. Then, of course, when he finally got out there to pitch, he was pitching gems. And then he had a historic game in the NLCS, where he had that amazing pitching game and hitting game with the 3 home runs and 10 strikeouts. So it's just, obviously, he was the MVP this year. So those awards went to the perfect players. Moving on to my top five this week. Haven't done a top five in a minute just because, you know, we've been talking about playoffs and all that jazz, but now getting back at it. So, you know, we were talking about the New England Patriots and how they went from basically worst to first this year. You know, the season's not over, but they are in first place in their division. And it's happened quite a few times. And so I decided we're going to do the top five NFL worst to first teams. And you know what? Actually, out of all five of them, four out of five of them ended up going on to the Super Bowl. So that just kind of goes to show you what can happen in these worst to first years. So if you have, if you're rooting for a team this year who's just absolute trash, you never know. If your team makes the right moves, they could be a top dog next year. So let's get into the top five NFL worst to first teams, beginning at number five with the 2006 New Orleans Saints. Now, first, let's just begin with the New Orleans Saints in general. If you are a football fan, you're like a lifer. Me, I am 40 years old. I've been watching football my entire life. I remember when I was a kid, it was unfathomable to think that the New Orleans Saints would ever be a good team, let alone go to the playoffs and win a Super Bowl. That was never going to happen when I was a kid. And you know what? Now they actually have won a Super Bowl before, but this 2006 team basically turned around this entire New Orleans Saints organization. They did end up going 10-6 in this season, and the previous season they were 3-13. So this was the post-Katrina year. This was Katrina hit in September, or was it August? Regardless, it was right before football season. So this is post-Katrina, and you know, the New Orleans Saints were actually thinking about moving from New Orleans. I mean, even before Katrina, the New Orleans Saints were like the first team that the NFL was thinking about moving to Los Angeles before the Rams and the Chargers ended up moving there. There was always this team that was going to move. And the owner of the Saints, he just didn't like being in New Orleans, especially because of the hurricane component of it. But the NFL wanted him to stay there because they like the Superdome. They love having the Super Bowl in the Superdome. They love having it in New Orleans. And the only way you can have a Super Bowl these days in any stadium is if it's an NFL team. And if no NFL team is in the Superdome, you cannot have Super Bowls anymore in the Superdome. So they wanted the Saints to stay there. So the NFL basically ended up paying the Saints a bunch of money to stay in New Orleans, and they also paid a bunch of money for the repairs, blah, blah, blah. But anyways, this 2006 team is what really turned it around, what really actually turned this team into a legitimate squad. And even though they're not really good this year, this team is now a team you look at and go, oh my God, the Saints, they should be good this year. This was Drew Brees' first year at quarterback. This was Sean Payton's first year as the coach. And even though they didn't go on to win the Super Bowl, they went all the way to the NFC Championship game. They did end up losing. But for me, this was where it all turned around for the Saints. They went from their fans wearing bags over their heads to then in a few seasons, I think three seasons later is when they would eventually go on to win the Super Bowl. And finally play, you know, I mean, I think it's either the following year or the year before, or 2 years after this 2016, where they finally got to go back to New Orleans and have their first game in the Superdome. And, you know, Gleason blocks the punt. And it just was just an amazing season for the New Orleans Saints overall. But this 2016 is where it all started for them. Then at number four on my top five NFL worst to first teams at the 1988 Cincinnati Bengals. In 1987, they were a 4-11 team, just had one of their worst seasons of all time. And then in the 1988 season, they went on to go 12-4 and be one of the top offenses in the league, just playing flawless football. As a matter of fact, their playoffs, they ended up going to the Super Bowl. So their playoff run, they actually obliterated every single team they faced off against up until the Super Bowl by over 14 points. This was year with Icky Woods, with the Icky Shuffle and all that. So, I mean, they were just flying high all the way up until they got to the Super Bowl. Super Bowl 23, they met their arch nemesis, Joe Montana, who ripped their hearts out again. But, I mean, it just goes to show you could turn it around. You could be the worst team in the league and then end up in the Super Bowl. But then you face off against Joe Montana and he rips your heart out right on the field and walks away with yet another Super Bowl. Then at number three on my top five NFL worst to first teams, I have the 2017 Philadelphia Eagles. They ended up going 13-3 in this season and went on to win Super Bowl 52. In the 2016 season, they went 7-9. So it wasn't terrible, but there was no way you were like, oh yeah, this Philadelphia Eagles team is going to go on to win the Super Bowl. Not only did they go on to win the Super Bowl, they beat the New England Patriots, and they actually beat the New England Patriots handedly. It was not even a close game at all. And this was the season where Carson Wentz, he was the starting quarterback to begin with. He was going on this MVP caliber type run, and then he tore his ACL. And then Nick Foles comes into play, and ain't nobody thinking Nick Foles is going to do a damn thing. And Nick Foles would not only come in and play good enough for the Eagles to win the division, but they would go on to win the division, win every single playoff game, and then absolutely dominate the New England Patriots in Super Bowl 52 and go on to win their first ever Super Bowl in their franchise's history. So they went from one of the worst teams in the previous year to winning the Super Bowl. Then at number two on my top five NFL worst to first teams, the 2001 New England Patriots. In the 2000 season, they were 5-11, and then in 2001, they went on to be 11-5. This was Tom Brady's first season. As a matter of fact, this was Bill Belichick's second season. Drew Bledsoe was supposed to be the starting quarterback, but I think it was the second game. He ended up getting injured. Tom Brady comes in. You know, he's their sixth-round pick, so ain't nothing supposed to happen with this New England Patriots team, but their defense sticks in it, and their offense just was good enough to keep it moving, and the New England Patriots not only would go on to Super Bowl 36, but they would win Super Bowl 36 against arguably one of the greatest offenses of all time, one of the top teams of all time in this era. This was a dynastic Rams team that they beat in Super Bowl 36. But not only did the Patriots win the Super Bowl and go from worst to first, but they were the dynasty. This was the beginning of every single Super Bowl from here on out from the New England Patriots from 2001 all the way to the very last one that they had. So this was not only the beginning of them just winning a Super Bowl, it was the beginning of a dynastic, insane era of dominating football from 2001 on. But number one on my top five NFL worst to first teams is the 1999 St. Louis Rams. They were 4-12 in the 1998 season, but would go 13-3 in the 1999 season. But this was so improbable of the type of run that they would go on. First of all, Trent Green was their starting quarterback, and he ended up getting injured in the first game of the season. So they send in Kurt Warner. Now, Kurt Warner is an undrafted player who's literally been bagging groceries. He played in the UFL. He's played in just about every type of football level you could play at. This dude just wants to play football. And so he got his chance to play football. And not only did he get his chance, he's got Marshall Faulk in the backfield, one of the greatest running backs of all time. He's got Isaac Bruce, a phenomenal Hall of Fame-level wide receiver. And then he's got Orlando Pace, one of the greatest offensive linemen of all time. And then a rookie receiver in Torrey Holt, who should be in the Hall of Fame, but isn't for some stupid fucking reason. But I will not get into that. But if you know, you know. But anyways, Kurt Warner would step into this great offense, and he would be the missing piece. And Kurt Warner would go on to not only win the MVP, but he would go on to win the Super Bowl MVP. This was the beginning of the greatest show on turf era for the St. Louis Rams. They would absolutely dominate in this five-ish year period. They would go on to win two of three Super Bowls. And they were undefeated at home this season. They went on to Super Bowl 34 to win Super Bowl 34. And they were the greatest show on turf. Like I said, you know, you got Kurt Warner, who's just playing lights out football. You've got Marshall Faulk at the peak, the pinnacle of his career. You've got Isaac Bruce, same with him, peak, pinnacle, Pace, peak, pinnacle, Holt, just young buck ready to keep it moving every single year. And that's why I had to put them at number one, because not only did they turn it around and go worst to first, but they would go on and be a dynastic type of team that would go on and have a dominating era and just really completely turned it around for their team, and just had a great run, and just was a great run for a lot of for a lot of players. And that's why it pisses me off why Torrey Holt's not in the Hall of Fame yet, because it's like, all of these dudes that I named off, Kurt Warner, Marshall Faulk, Isaac Bruce, Orlando Pace, those guys are all in it, and they deserve to be in it, but so the fuck does Torrey Holt. Let the dude in there. I mean, he was a huge piece of this team, but this is why I had to put them in there, because they were such a great team, and just the way their season started, there was no way that this team was going to go on to win the Super Bowl, and not only did they do that, they went on to win the Super Bowl, but also would go on and just have a great 5 years after that. All right, y'all, enjoy the rest of the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.